That's why you came to me. Isn't it, Captain? Because you knew I could do those things that you weren't capable of doing. Well, it worked. And you'll get what you want. A war between the Romulans and the Dominion. And if your conscience is bothering you, you should soothe it with the knowledge that you may have just saved the entire Alpha Quadrant, and all it cost was the life of one Romulan senator, one criminal, and the self-respect of one Starfleet officer.
You say we don't know, we say we don't know, we say Trek This
Hello and welcome to Trek This Out, where we're talking about this week's Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 6 Episode 19, is that? In the Pale Moonlight. I always forget the name of it and it's like my favourite episode. How's that work? Anyway, today we have our very own Captain Sisko, Suki.
Hello.
Our Jadzia Dax, Deb.
Ooh, that's good then. So I get to marry a Klingon. I like Worf.
And Spock.
Oh, yeah. She does thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you, Deb.
We have our Major Kira in Andrea.
Hello.
We have blanking now. Another male character.
Bashir, surely the intelligent one.
Okay.
Just go for it, O'Brien.
Work.
Or O'Brien, yeah, the one that has always been punished all the time.
No, you do look most like Quark.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, okay,
we've got a perfect Quark here. Drew.
Hey, hello.
And I'm half Irish, half Dr. Bashir, so we've got those two bases. So, my name's Jack, and I'll be your guest host.
Hello, Jack.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, there's one show for Tribble.
Yeah. You go with that, Tribble.
Yay, Tribble.
You got one on your chin, too.
Don't let them get too close, otherwise there'll be a whole litter of them by the end of the podcast.
I have a little selection of Tribbles behind me head, and it's in work meetings I've been asked several times, are there wigs?
Just tell them the William Shatner's cast-offs.
Yeah,
I regularly get asked, why have I got wigs? Like, they're not wigs, they're tribbles, and most people just look at you blankly. So
okay. We've got some news, haven't we, this week?
Yeah, I'm scared.
Jack, tell us about this news that you posted to us earlier on.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Come on, Jack. Tell us this news.
I read online Star Trek 4 was cancelled, but Paramount going ahead with Star Trek 5. So in my head, I went, oh my God, look at this news. Look at this news. And then everyone turned around and went, no. How could you fall for that?
That's it. Check the date.
Yes.
We are recording on April the 1st.
We are. Sorry, Tay. I wanted that to be true.
Yeah, and Jack, Suki's going to be the new Doctor Who as well.
I've long said you should be, Suki.
I'm glad somebody does think that, because I have always wanted to be. Right, and at least I've got one person that will vote for me being the new Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
So there was actually some news, though, wasn't there? Section 31, there's a picture from the completed filming, wasn't there? And a character's been revealed. Do we know about this?
No.
Yes, I've heard about it. Or Is it the same character I've heard about?
I was just going to say, I've seen, my understanding is that this is going to be set kind of post-TOS, pre-TNG, and a certain Enterprise that we may have seen before, but only briefly. Maybe the plot may revolve around that. Mm-hmm. In the ballpark.
Yeah, it's Rachel Garrett, the captain of Enterprise C, is rumoured to be in it. So that would place it between TOS and TNG.
Well, it does have that statue in Picard.
It's a fake!
What was everyone's first thoughts on the episode? So, Ashley, yeah, we'll go to you, Suku.
Okay, so I'm not really somebody that's watched the complete Deep Space Nine series. I've watched maybe the first 2 years, possibly the third, but that's about it. So I never got this far. So this is the first time I've seen this episode. And I watched it this afternoon. And not knowing really too much about the history of Deep Space Nine and how this fits in with everything, it was easy to follow. And I just found it really engaging and thoughtful, and the actual shenanigans that he has to go through to get the Romulans involved in this war. I just think it is a really, really great episode for Benjamin Sisko, Avery Brooks. It's a fantastic episode. So for me, I'm quite positive about this.
Very good, very good. This is going to be very good. Drew, what do you think?
I'm just quickly writing down a note. Possible red shirt Suki only watched 2 years of Deep Space Nine?
Possibly
is that
three.
True? This episode is excellent. There's no two ways about it. It is the best episode of Deep Space Nine, maybe the best episode of all Trek. I'd certainly used to say that before modern Trek. It's excellent. Brilliant.
Okay, Andrea, what do you think?
I love this episode of Deep Space Nine. And I think it is absolutely right that I think it finds its legs from season four, really, when things like really start to happen. And I think it finds its place as a show. And I think that kind of all the story around the war and what goes on. And it's border on kind of Section 31 shenanigans, isn't it? It's like... Mm-hmm. It's really kind of outside of the norm. It's not what we normally see. And I think I'm going to give this lots of lights. I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, that sounds very good. Very all positive. Deb?
Yeah, I thought it was terrible. I mean, how can you say this is proper Star Trek? You know, Gene Roddenberry was still around at this point, and already was around at the point where Deep Space Nine was created. You know, you just can't have Starfleet doing this terrible things. It's, duplicitous of responsible people's deaths.
I'm just checking what date it is.
It wasn't woke enough. Basically, Star Trek isn't what it used to be. This is what I'm saying, you know. We need to go back to the days of the sets, the foam rocks and the sets that wobble. You know, how dare they move Star Trek onto a position where they actually have a decent script and good acting, and you know, where were all the gay relationships? It's just not woke enough. Awful, absolutely terrible.
Debbie's definitely going for it in this episode.
No, I thought it was brilliant, but I also thought this is going to be a really boring discussion, wasn't it? And I sat and watched it yesterday, and it is the sort of track that I love when there's a lot of psychological-ness behind it. But I also thought, we're all going to agree, aren't we?
I think in amongst that, though, I think there's a really kind of salient point about people, when people get on the high horses about, oh, it's not Star Trek, it's not Roddenberry's vision and all the rest of it. Like, this is like a Starfleet captain basically telling lies to involve people in a war. Like, it's like, when I mentioned Section 31, it is that underhanded, and it's a brilliant episode. And I don't remember anybody kind of going, oh, well, you know, the what about Deep Space Nine? But actually, like, I know people talk about it being a darker Trek, but it kind of gets glossed over. And I think if that storyline was in a recent episode of Star Trek, I would just be like, pass the popcorn for the comments, because it really is. It's that very edgy kind of Trek, isn't it? It's not cozy going around on your Marriott hotel doing like your little diplomacy thing. This is like really like closed door stuff.
I went back and I was reading some of the comments at the time, and there was an element of that. That's why I thought I would pick up on it. But also, you know, the whole idea that Trek has to go back to, you know, it's not real Trek now. And it's exactly the same comments as we've had ever since Next Generation. People have always claimed that Trek has to be something. But have to admit, I was feeling a bit fed up when I watched it. And I kind of was thinking, well, this isn't a barrel of laughs, is it? But, you know, Trek doesn't always have to be what you expect. It was good. It was Avery Brooks was acting. Well, to be honest, he was acting very well, but I also read when I went back on it, he was supposed to be getting more drunk. I didn't see much signs of that. So me and Vin need to be giving Avery Brooks getting drunk lessons.
I can do that. That is my repertoire, I've got to say. I can't act, but I can get drunk.
Well, Avery Brooks, it's a tour de force performance, and it helps in that the scenes that he's by himself, they're straight to camera. He's looking at us and he's making us question his motives, making us question what he's doing. Is it right? Is it wrong? And then he's already down that path as the episode goes along, that he can't stop it now. He knows that every time he makes a move, there's always going to be some sort of consequence to it. But at the same time, he's looking at the bigger picture and realises that if he doesn't do anything, there's more and more people being killed. And he's in that sort of dilemma. And then towards the end of the episode, he decides that dilemma, the scales, is balanced in his favour of actually just going for all this underhand dealings. And I think Avery Brooks there, if he's meant to be getting drunk, I can't see him myself. But Avery Brooks' character, Benjamin Sisko, the way he's been portrayed there, it's just, I think, it's just fantastic the way he's done it. And it helps with the direction and the camera work there. But the rest of the story, yeah, it just builds on those little scenes where he's just talking towards the camera.
Just to blow my own horn for a second, my master's is in US history. And this has a lot of not so far deep parallels with the Gulf Tonkin incident, which basically the US in the very early 1960s sort of used to justify their continued involvement and getting more boots on the ground in the Vietnam War. Well, war. It wasn't declared, so it's not a war, but in Vietnam. So I think that was the general metaphor, but it can be also broadly applied to a lot of situations, really.
I was just going to say, I think the Romulans are the absolute perfect kind of foils for this episode, because I've always liked the Romulans, because I think they've got that edge to them. And I think of all the kind of enemies we come across, like the Borg are very single-minded and have a very sort of basic and clear and obvious purpose to what they're doing. The Klingons are kind of, they're just like, let's like, you know, fight now, talk later. Whereas the Romulans have got that kind of like behind closed doors, that like sort of cloak and dagger feel about them. So I think they're the kind of the ideal kind of race to use for this. And I think the Romulan guy was really good. I think he played that really well, and he was kind of warned he was going to like turn up and do a bit of shit housery on arrival because he thinks he's like in the winning position, which Garrett kind of reads really well. But I think in terms of the aliens in this episode, I think we need to have a shout out for the Camp Blue guy who kind of You know, I can understand how Quark might get stabbed, to be honest. In fact, I'm surprised he doesn't get stabbed more often. But there is something about, like, Deep Space Nine making guys in prosthetic really camp. It's like a thing, isn't it? And he comes and he's like, oh, I'll do that. I'll do you a bit forwardery for you, love. And he's a bit sort of... And he's kind of the only kind of light bit in this episode, I think, because it's quite dark and heavy, isn't it? And he kind of, like, sweeps in and does his little, like, oh, well, I'll make you a little forwardery for you, lovey. And he's very sort of jolly and camp, and then he stabs Quark, which kind of distracts us for a minute. But, yeah, I think he kind of... He's a necessary element in this episode to stop it being, like, so entirely, like, dark.
Yeah, he is. He's Tolar, I think his name is, isn't it? He is great. I love the interplay between him and Garak as well. He's obviously absolutely terrified of Garak, isn't he? And that bit where Garak says about, I've suggested that I've put an explosive in his door, and Sisko says, oh, that is just like a suggestion, isn't it? And he says, oh, best not to worry about the minutia details. It's so good. But yeah, Vrenak, that's his name, isn't it? The Romulan, he's so good. I love the bit where he first comes on Deep Space Nine, and he is just like tearing Sisko down, like one bad comment after another. He's just a real meanie, isn't he?
Do you know what, though? All it took to, like, just chill him out was, like, they cracked open the Blue Wicked. It's like the pipes of peace, that just get the Blue Wicked out, and it puts everyone in a better mood. But I think what's really clever in that scene is that conversation plays out exactly the way he rehearsed it with Dax. Like, Dax knew exactly what that Romulan was going to say, and it plays out, like, almost word for word the way she kind of predicted. So I think that scene's really, really well done.
Now, is that a hand up, Jack, by the way, before we... All right.
I've got a snack for today, and it's a play.
Only the crumbliest, flakiest chocolate tastes like chocolate never tasted before.
Well, I'm glad someone's brought that up, because that was going to be my next point. Yes. Do you want to carry on, Jack?
Yeah, I've got to love how, in the most probably the most serious and very well regarded episode, the bloke, I can't remember his name, just plays Vrenak, goes, yes, I'm just going to really ham up this line for no reason. And it's going to be an incident, a meme, before we knew what memes were.
100%. Yes, it launches a million memes, doesn't it? It's a fake, but it's so hilarious in such a dark episode.
Well, we carry on. The Tola character, Sisko says he was killed off. Was there anything before that? Did I miss something? And I watched this episode twice, and I don't know if he was killed off. But he seems to imply Garak killed him off.
Yeah. It was a sabotage. He sabotaged because as a backup, if they spotted it was fake. That was the Romulan he killed, didn't it?
You're talking about Tolar, though, aren't you? The holographic production guy.
The forger.
The forger, yes. No, it's not confirmed, but it's just suggested that that's what Garak's done, isn't it? Which obviously he has done.
Now, this character of Garak, again, I'm not sure how much he was on Deep Space Nine in the first couple of years, but he seems to be well connected with everybody, and he's supposed to be, what, a tailor on the station, and he's well connected with loads of the different factions that are involved. And Andrew Robinson was brilliant in this. The way he seemed to manipulate Sisko into doing what he wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, you must watch Deep Space Nine, Saki, because Garak is the best character in all of it. And Andrew Robinson is an excellent actor. you need to get the backstory of him, it being in the Obsidian Order and everything. I mean, my theory on this, and I think it's pretty much played out in the episode, is that all of this is Garrett. I think, because he has lots of dinner dates with Bashir, I think he put the idea into Bashir's head to bring the Romulans into the war. Because at the beginning of the episode, it's Bashir that says to Sisko, we need another ally. We need the Romulans to come into the war. And you know that Bashir isn't part of the conspiracy because he's, when Sisko asks him to get the, whatever it is, the 200 litres of the stuff, he really wants the orders in writing. So Bashir's not in on it, but he's being manipulated by Garak to suggest to Sisko to bring the Romulans in. And then Garak's just got the whole plan. I mean, how does he come up with it on the fly to get Renak there and then to get the rod and then to blow up the shuttle and then that will ensure that the Dominion will get blamed? It's all master manipulator Garak, isn't it?
It might just be me because I've seen the episode a few times because I'm kind of obsessed with this one. That they're saying that, well, Captain Sisko is playing 3D chess. Garak is playing at least 70 and like 20 moves ahead of anything you could even think of.
100%. Yeah, I can't disagree at all.
Garak is such a wonderful line. You're like, who, me? It wasn't me. Like, why would I know anything about this? And his cover is so convincing, isn't it? He just seems like he's like jolly little tailor, like, me, I wouldn't know. But he has got that kind of a history and that all of those layers. And I think you're probably right. I never really thought about it like that, but I think he's probably masterminded the whole thing from day one, hasn't he? I never really thought about who planted the seed to get the Romulans in, but yeah, I can really see that. That's kind of changed my spin on the episode now, so...
Yeah, I think Garak is to blame for the whole defeat of the Dominion and saving the Alpha and the Beta Quadrants, really. If it wasn't for him, then we would have lost the war, wouldn't we?
Wait. What, you mean Starfleet win? I mean, you could say spoilers.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. It's only 25 years old.
Oh yeah, that means old. I don't have to watch the series, do I? Yeah. You know, now they drew sports for me.
There's part of me, though, initially when that plan starts to kind of unravel and they talk about kind of, I definitely think that a heist on Cardassia Prime to get one of those rods would have been a bloody good episode.
Oh, like, that would have
been an awesome episode. Like, I think there was like a complete other like alternate take on that, which would have been just as good, but very different. But I think like that almost they almost dangle that because I feel like Cardassia is somewhere we didn't really see enough. I would have liked to have seen more of that. And they kind of trail that they're going to go on this heist mission, and it's quite exciting. Me, I kind of think, oh, I kind of wish they'd done that now. But what we got was excellent. But I think, yeah, there was definitely an episode in that.
Do you think though that all these contacts really got killed, or that was just part of him saying, oh no, that's not worked, so I've got a better plan now to get the Romulans into the war?
I reckon Garak probably knew, right, people will die from this. Who of my air quote friends do I want to be dead the most?
I don't think anybody died. Not on Cardassia. I have a feeling he knew he'd make Sisko feel guilty, that he's already gone this far, people have already died, and the plan has to carry on now because, you know, people have lost their lives trying to work, make sure this is going to happen. So I have a feeling nobody died, and it's just a ploy by Garak to make Sisko feel guilty.
Well, yeah, because he says, oh, my contacts are now dead, so that's the end of it. And Sisko starts to leave the shop, doesn't he? And Garak says to him, we're not giving up, though, are we? You know, that was just one plan that we had. So he's definitely, no one died.
The thing there as well, I do think Garak is also sometimes working on the fly. I have a feeling that if Renak or the Romulan had decided that he was going to join the Federation, he wouldn't have blown up the shuttle because they needed him to endorse a plan. But when he turned on them, that's when the bomb came into play, whatever he'd planted on the ship.
Well, Renak is the person that negotiated the treaty between Romulus and the Dominion, isn't he? And he says he's an outspoken supporter of it. So I think Garak always knew that it was never going to work to convince him, really. Possibly, anyway.
I agree. I think the subtext, I'm not 100% in this, but I think the subtext is Garak showing one thing and he's manipulating to get another thing, but they both have the same goal, if that makes sense. I don't really know.
So just going back to that, I was saying about, and I found my notes now, 200 litres of biomimetic gel, which is a dangerous and controlled substance. It's another bit in the episode. There's so many bits in this, so we're going to be going through. But it's a really good bit in the episode that I like, where Sisko goes to Bashir and he says, you know, I want this. And Bashir says, well, you know, there's no chance you're getting it without an order. And he says, yep, he says, that's an order. And he says, I want it in writing. And he says, here it is. I knew you'd ask for it. And Bashir says, what's he say? He says, I'm going to put it in my log and I'm going to lodge a complaint with Starfleet Medical. I really like that scene. It's because, you know, Bashir and Sisko are friends and they're good comrades, but I like how professional they both are there. You know, they're not mincing their words because they both know what's on the line.
I think it sort of speaks to maybe how good an character arc that is for Bashir, because when you see Bashir in Emissary, very green behind the ears, very young, very easily manipulated. And then go through this, and by this point, he's already done the episode that almost got him sued, where they parody James Bond. And they parody it so hard, but there happened to be a film coming out at the time. Ironically, my favorite one. They got really sued for that, but he still kept the character that he's also secretly James Bond in space. Before book, basically. So he also the whole he's got super base. I can't remember the Una. That's it. Una in Strange New Worlds. He's got her superpowers as well.
Enhanced human, wasn't he?
But they don't reveal that till like season 4. So I'm not sure if that was planned from the start. Probably not. But it does. It's good arc for him.
It is, especially when we think about like the last episode we watched him in was one of the season 1 episodes, wasn't it? And he was a bit terrible in that one.
I think everything was terrible with Move Along Home.
It's an interesting contrast though, because it almost doesn't feel like the same show. It was very light. It was very kind of contained in a box sort of episode. And I think you could watch that completely out of sequence and not be affected at all, whereas I think this is much more. I think this is kind of Star Trek becoming more and more sort of serialized, because I think you can watch it and you can follow the plot, but you're probably losing quite a lot by not having that context around it. And I think very much Deep Space Nine kind of led the way with that kind of those really long arcs and that kind of ongoing storyline, and far more than any other Trek, really, more than Voyager. I think Voyager was a lot more kind of in a box than I think Deep Space Nine was. So I think it's planted the seeds a lot for what we see now, really. But they are very, very different, and you know, they're at very different points in its life.
I have to agree with you there, Andrea, with the fact that I haven't watched a lot of the backstory of Deep Space Nine and coming into this episode sort of cold. And I know some stuff about what happens during the series, but not having watched it religiously each week or on a binge basis, and I don't know what the subtleties of some of the characters and the way things interact. But this episode, to be honest, doesn't really need that sort of backstory here too much to know what is going on, because it's all spelled out on the screen and in the performances and in the plot, basically, in that, you know, that Sisko has decided, whether he's been being manipulated by Garak or not, that he needs Romulans in. And then he goes on this plan, and each turn that each time he makes a decision, he then has to compromise, and then he makes another decision, then he has to compromise again. And then in the end, he cannot stop it all until it comes to that, the original plan, which was to get the Romulans involved in the war. And he's had to make so many decisions that other captains probably might not have made, but because he's the one that come up with the original plan, he's the one that's going to carry on with it.
I just thought it'd be good to note that, sort of going on from what Drew and Andrew said, there is a continuation novel by Una McCormack, who is probably the biggest writer of Star Trek novels there is at the moment, called, I think it's called Hollow Man. And it's basically after, I think it's after the end of the war, or it's definitely in the future of this episode. The people on Earth find out that it really was, it's a fake. And there's the reaction to that. So that might give a good postscript to the episode.
I was going to move on to another bit that I really like at this episode, which is the because Tolar stabs Quark, doesn't he? And Sisko doesn't want anyone to know he's on the station, so he's got to convince Quark to not press charges. And I love how, like, Quark is just like typical Ferengi, who's been injured, been attacked, and he's all like all moaning and crying and all weak and woolly. And then as soon as Sisko's like, what do I need to do for you to not press charges? And he just turns on a dime, and he's all smiley and he's happy. And he says, you know, I knew that you would have a price. He just becomes like that Ferengi then, doesn't he? And what does he say about the 189th Ferengi rules of acquisition? He's like, every man has his price. So it's another really good piece of this episode.
Well, I just want to say, every man has his price, also by the wrestler Ted DiBiase, but also it shows you how good an actor Armin Shimerman is, because at this time, it's late 98, he's also on Buffy, and he's got a pretty fairly prominent role on that. I think the deal was he went to Paramount Studios in the morning, did Deep Space Nine in the morning, afternoon he spent at wherever they shot Buffy. So that's quite a strong actor.
I'm just going to say the Armin Shimerman, if I remember correctly, a lot of his scenes were at nighttime, so that could easily have been done, you know, filming during the day. And then a lot of the scenes outside Sunnyvale, was it Sunnyvale? Oh, I can't remember now.
Sunnyvale.
Yeah, where so all of them, his scenes were seen to be outdoors, so during the night. So yeah, he could have been able to do both shows.
Let's go back to the beginning of the episode, where it is, which I think someone's mentioned already, with Dax and Sisko role playing the Romulans against the Federation. It's another excellent scene in the episode, isn't it? Because Dax really does play the Romulans well, and just shows that, you know, all them lifetimes that the Dax symbiont has been around, no doubt Romulans and other people, she's just really got them on point, exactly what they're going to do. It's a good part.
Well, that scene as well, though, you know, you've got Dax and Sisko as best friends, and they confide in each other. They go back many, many years. But for some reason, Sisko did not divulge the plan to Dax. And why didn't he do that? I mean, he normally goes through a lot of stuff, through, you know, thinks it out or talks it through with her, but he doesn't do it in this episode, which is a bit, I just found a bit weird.
I found that a bit weird too. In my head canon, he wants to keep it as compartmentalized as possible. And even though Dax would be the natural person to talk to, he wants to keep it as quite as possible. So it's basically him, Tolar, and Garak.
I kind of just took it as real, and they had that conversation about proof that Dax had enough about her to think, yeah, something's got to happen here, and he didn't really. It's that plausible deniability, isn't it? If I don't tell someone, then they don't know. So I think that was probably taken as read that, like, yeah, something might be going on here, but I'm not going to get too involved. But just going back to the very opening of the episode, since we're recording this at the end of a kind of a double bank holiday weekend, where he's trying to work out what day of the week it is. You know, it's almost like Sisko's trying to work out when bin day is, and I think for me, the most relatable scene in the entire episode, because I don't know what day of the week it is either. Apparently it's Monday, but, you know, it's Sunday in my head. So I don't know, maybe I've been in league with the Obsidian Order up to no good, because I don't know what day of the week it is either. So that's the most relatable scene in the episode of the week.
You need a binfluencer, don't you, in your street to know when to put the bins out?
We've got one, he's called Norman. He's like bin patrol, he even looks to see what's in your bin. So shout out to Norman.
Good job, Norman. I was thinking, I'm trying to think, but I'm still at work on my mind. Is this the only time in, I think there's 900 odd episodes that we get characters talking to the camera?
Yeah, I think it is, isn't it? But I mean, he's not actually breaking the fourth wall, is he? He's meant to be giving a log. So I guess you assume it's some kind of visual captain's log, maybe. Yeah, here's a question, so we're not just constantly saying how good this episode is. So we've said that, you know, Sisko has lied and he's cheated, and like at the end of the episode he deletes the log, doesn't he, so that there's not actually any recording of it. Can we imagine any other captains doing all the stuff that Sisko's doing? I mean, certainly not Picard. He would never do this, would he?
Yeah, we all know Picard and Kirk would never do this sort of thing. That's too up, you know, they're within Federation policy and they will do everything by the book most of the time. And this was out and out subterfuge by Sisko, going out of his way to do this thing where he knows he's breaking so many rules to get it done. So he is actually... I think he's the only one that would probably do it.
Lorca would have done. He wouldn't have needed Garak.
Lorca just... was which Lorca though? Prime Lorca or the one that was the
either of them.
Oh, okay, I don't believe that. I don't think the Lorca that was the one that takes over. He might have done it, but the original one, I don't think he would have done.
Well, we don't know. We don't know.
I think the most, I might get shot down for this, I think the most likely of the captain to kind of think this is our only option, let's do what we have to do, I'm going to say Janeway.
Janeway.
I think she had the most kind of like, I'm in a desperate situation, this is what has to happen, okay, I can live with it, it's for the best. I think she's probably the... of all of that, I'm not saying she'd definitely do it, but I think the most likely to have sort of give it proper consideration. I thought, yeah, I might well go for this.
Well, it was protecting our space needs.
I agree 100% with you, because I think Voyager and Prodigy is 9 years of saying Janeway is a resourceful woman. She would do this thing. It just so happens Sisko did it first that we know of.
The thing about Sisko, though, I mean, he got back up, though, didn't he? He got the Starfleet to back him up, because he does say that one sentence, I am sort of off the hook or whatever, because he knows Starfleet to back him up. So there is now out there, within Starfleet logs, Federation data, whatever, the video logs or whatever, the information that what he did, even though he's deleted his own personal log, there is going to be stuff out there where they know that he was the one that sort of instigated this plan and went with it. But I could see why he did his own little personal log, because it's cathartic in it to be able to say it out, everything that he's done out loud, talk it over. It doesn't have to be with anybody, but just to himself. And then afterwards, when he's got it all out of his system, he can just delete it and then put it away and go, just go walk on, carry on with his job as the captain of the space station.
I was just going to say, Starfleet Command seemed very quick to go, yeah, let's just roll with this. Great idea. Like, wasn't our idea. Like, we'll deny all knowledge, but like, yeah, just go for it. You know, when you think there's like bribery, forgery, planned a possible break-in, getting convicts out of jail, there's like illegal goods, like, you know, there's quite a lot of naughtiness and shenanigans going on there. And Starfleet Command were like, yeah, yeah, let's do it. Yep. Fine. There doesn't seem to be much of a fight, like from the grand and noble sort of prime directive, like kind of led organization. When it comes down, when the shit's hitting the fan, they're like, yeah, just do what you got to do.
Thing there as well, there's so many people higher than Sisko within Starfleet Federation that one of them, or at least half a dozen, maybe God knows how many, would have also come up with the same idea, get the Romulans into the war, and that could be on our side. That might be the edge to defeat the Dominion. So they probably already had this idea, but when Sisko comes up with a plan himself and then passes it on, they're quite happy to jump on and then go, yep, you're right. Why didn't we think of that, even though they probably all did, and decided Sisko, if anything did go wrong, Sisko would be the fall guy.
Well, this is really like maximum Section 31 time of Star Trek, isn't it? It's where Section 31 comes from, Deep Space Nine, and as you know, more spoilers for the people who haven't actually bothered to watch Deep Space Nine. Section 31 is like very much intertwined with the higher echelons of the Federation and Starfleet. So again, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they're in league with Garak somehow, manipulating both Bashir and Sisko.
Oh, so that was the other thing I was going to say. You sure Garak isn't part of Section 31? I mean, wouldn't Section 31 recruit people from other races just to help them do whatever they need to do behind the scenes? So they might have recruited Garak. Garak might be Section 31. Well, you don't know.
I think the subsect is maybe Section 31 and Garak all working for each other. They don't know who's got the upper hand out of two of them. But that's one of the things I love about a lot of Star Trek, but especially this episode, is that you can debate things like this forever. So layered, so nuanced.
Definitely. So should we go to near the end of the episode, the bit which is, again, I think the final excellent scene of the episode, where Sisko realizes that what's happened, like with Renak's shuttle being destroyed, and he goes to confront Garak and first of all attacks him in his shop, doesn't he? And that's when Garak spits out all of the bad stuff that he's been doing and reveals that he was behind it all, really. It's an excellent scene again. I mean, Andrew Robinson is just tour de force acting in this episode. I think he does say it's one of his very favourite episodes of Deep Space Nine. It's an excellent scene.
I agree with that. It's just the way that he's just been battered. He's just been knocked to the ground, but he still comes up and sticks to his guns, basically, and just shouts in Sisko's face and says, I'm doing the things that you couldn't do, basically. Right? If I wasn't here, you wouldn't be able to do these things, and I'm making sure this happens. Right? So, yeah, it is after highlight after highlight after highlight throughout the whole of this episode to get this extra little scene right at the end. I mean, doesn't even account the one right at the end with Sisko by himself, but one just before the end, I think is a really, really fantastic episode.
Obviously, I'm not sure if that was stage punch or Andrew Robinson said, yeah, just lever it on me. But that punch was extremely convincing.
I want to know how strong humans are on Deep Space Nine. Have they got that superhuman strength on a space station where they can knock a Cardassian with one punch way over his table onto the ground? Oh. Right? It's not just a whack on the face where he just falls down. He whacks him, causes him to fly across the table before he hits the floor.
Well, he was just doing, Garrett was just doing some sewing, wasn't he? He was just doing a bit of needlecraft. He wasn't expecting the punch. So I think that's why it was so successfully landed, really.
I think Garrick had enough about him as well to kind of let him have that one. Like, yeah, I'll take a punch because I know that's going to make you feel better and make this conversation easier. Like, I think he definitely, like, has enough kind of the cogs turning to think, yeah, he's going to hit us. Because he's got a form, hasn't he, Cisco, for, like, punching people because he's annoyed. Like, it is, like, a thing. Like, this isn't the first time he's just, like, sparked someone because which you don't often see Starfleet captains doing, but he did definitely have form for it. So I don't think Garrick will have been surprised, really. I think that's pretty much like on brand. Like, that's what's going to happen.
You got the second punch that comes along as well, because you got the first one that flies, getting to fly across the table. And then the second one, which is Sisko's about to land, Garrick blocks and then he punches with the other hand and knocks him flying again. Right. So it's two punches he manages to land on Garrick within couple of seconds, basically, and you're just wondering why this Kardashian, this powerful Kardashian, just didn't defend himself. Maybe, as Andrea says, he is letting him make a point.
It's because Cisco sees himself in Garrick at that point and sees what he's done, and so in a way, it's attacking himself. He knows what Garrick's like, so what's the point in getting angry about it? I think it's because of what he feels he's done, even if he can live with it. He doesn't know at that stage, because apparently he hasn't got drunk.
Fine. Don't they have Romulan drinks on the station? What Romulan ale? Isn't that
they
a thing?
Do, but they're not allowed to.
It's illegal, isn't it?
Oh, right.
They got the Blue Wicked.
The Blue Wicked.
I'm never going to not see it as that now. Sorry, my cat's joined us.
It's a tradition. Somebody's pets always join us.
On the first time it was on my cat Dave joined us. Now it's Hermione.
Hello, Hermione.
Hermione. Oh, she's not interested.
Coco the dog is not even snoring.
Well, I mean, I think we've pretty much gone through most of the episode now, haven't we? We're not going to just continually be saying how good it is, are we? The whole podcast.
I tried.
I have written in my notes, when a stern Romulan asks to examine your rod, ... So that felt quite on brand for me. But otherwise, it was quite... my notes are quite serious this week, so, you know...
I always do like a final watch through of this with the wife and not if we can feed some funny lines. And there's just not much funny in this episode, is there, unfortunately?
I truly think of the... I don't know what my absolute favourite episode of Star Trek as a franchise would be, but it'd be a weird time if I don't put this in top 5 episodes of all time. I think this is like, in terms of James Bond, this is From Russia with Love. This is one of the best ones there is going. I can't find fault in it.
How many lights you see?
Four lights!
I asked how many lights you see.
And Joe, how many lights would you give it?
Definite 5. 100%. It's so, so good. I was slightly worried because I've done a few run-throughs of Deep Space Nine, watched the whole lot about 3 or 4 times, and I was slightly worried, such an integral part of the storyline episode, how this was going to be, watching it completely cold. But, I mean, within the first couple of minutes, I was just so into it. I can't praise this enough. I definitely used to say that this was my favourite episode of all time of Star Trek, but things like These Old Scientists and that have probably surpassed it. But it's definitely, you're right, Jack, in the top 5, 100%. 5 out of 5.
Andrea?
I'm another 5, I'm afraid. It's might be a sweep here. It's hard to fault, really, for what it set out to do and what it did. Yeah, I think it did a really good job.
Deb?
I'm going 4 because there wasn't enough woke in it.
Really?
I always try to leave a bit of room for a bit better. And it was very political and scary in the sense that that this is the duplicitousness is kind of what goes on. The fact that you're prepared to sacrifice lives for the greater good. I thought the direction, the way that it got more claustrophobic on Cisco was fantastic. Oh, go on, 4.5. But I just think there's room. There's room, always room. And it would have been interesting to see it in the context of at the time, because I think now maybe that type of story is more commonplace in sci-fi than it was then. One of the reasons I wasn't too into Deep Space Nine was because I was busy watching Battlestar Galactica around this time, and that is just an amazing, they're both brilliant, and I know they get
an amazing show.
Yeah, and they get compared with each other a lot, and they're both great in the same way, and I love Worf in Deep Space Nine, so more Worf as well, that would get the extra half point, more Worf.
Yeah, he's not in this episode that much actually. Suki, what are your thoughts?
Well, I am going to echo Drew and Andrea. It is a 5 out of 5 because, as I says, it's wonderful in the way Avery Brooks plays Sisko in this episode. I like Andrew Robertson's Tyler Garrick and the way he's manipulating everything, especially after Drew saying that he might have manipulated Bashir right at the beginning to set all these events into motion. The whole talking to the direction of this, the talking to the camera, really sets it apart from other episodes. And I just think it's a fantastic episode. Really, really great episode, basically. So, yeah, 5 out of 5 from me. What do you think, Jack? What's your lights out of 5?
Well, it's very strong start. And I'm going to join almost all of you. In fact, all of you, I'm going to say. And I'm going to give it 5 out of 5. There's a reason that I picked this episode after Chip my toad and put a hole through my mouth, which is started to heal now. Very good. And it is so uniquely strong. And I'm kind of surprised they've never used that gimmick, not gimmick, but device, the storytelling device of a main character talking to the screen again, but there you go.
I'm just thinking that maybe they didn't bother using that sort of gimmick again is because they did it so well here, and everything that they would do in future episodes would just be compared to this episode. And if they can't really match it in quality, they're just going to look at it and go, no, we ain't going to continue. We ain't going to be able to do this. So they don't bother doing it.
Okay. Now you've heard what we think. Very glowing. Let's hear what the listeners think.
Listeners feedback.
Oh, goody. It's a long one. I deserve this. I really do.
Oh, okay. Just a minute. I just turned the computer, turned my phone on, and apparently Paddington has done the best April Fools ever. He's just written, "I've decided I am never going to eat another marmalade sandwich." I like Paddington.
I love Paddington.
Yeah, he's not going to eat marmalade sandwich anymore. Yeah, sorry, I'll go back to Twitter now. Start again. Go on. Lights out of 5.
Okay, I have Murray Christensen. Hi everyone, feedback for In the Pale Moonlight. This episode boils down to the essential elements that make Deep Space Nine possibly my favourite track. It's ethically dubious decisions taken for a greater good. Greater good. And it doesn't shy away from the idea the entire goal is pretty dubious. You could agree that once they'd be in the Federation and the Klingons and the Dominion would have that. The Dominion would have taken on the Romulans. Even that is not guaranteed. All we have is Starfleet captain doing a lot of illegal things to open the second front, effectively trading Romulan lives for Federation and Klingon ones. To cap it all off, for all the deliberate ethical compromises Sisko makes, he was in fact inadvertently being involved in what is basically an elaborate assassination plot by Garak. Both Brooks and Robinson are absolutely brilliant in this and really work well together. Overall, a well-deserved classic. Five lights. I had a sixth light, but that turned out to be a fake. I would never get tired of doing that.
Good.
There you see? As always, love the show.
Should I do Dave K? Because I gave him a gold star for his feedback and for watching all the crap episodes. We made him watch a good one. I didn't have to re-watch this one for the podcast, but I did re-watch it because it's absolutely favourite episode of DS9 and in my top five Treks of all time. One of the key pillars of Star Trek is exciting space adventure, and In the Pale Moonlight has that in spades. But the other pillar, which makes Trek its own thing, is watching humanity of the future live by the ideals Roddenberry set out. This is fine in Next Generation, where the Federation is top dog and the crew flies around in a luxury hotel. But what sets Deep Space Nine apart is seeing how the characters try to live by their values when faced with genuinely existential threats. And this episode and Homefront really bring that home. Sisko explores all alternative paths and only reaches the end point one understandable compromise at a time, aided by characters like Garak, who just wouldn't work in any other Trek. Can our values survive this pressure? Was Sisko right to compromise? This episode asks the question and leaves the answer to the viewer to decide. It's a brilliant script and a tour de force performance from Brooks. I remember watching this when it first came out. I was blown away by it then and still am today. Everyone talks about the "it is fake" moment. And I remember the first time I saw that, feeling like I'd been hit by a train. Amazing. Five lights. I would give it six. If I could give it six, I would. P.S. I think you've now done three of my top five stories.
Yes, we need to know the other two, don't we?
Yeah.
And do
one
them.
Has to be threshold.
We've done threshold, haven't we? So it's not that.
Oh, mask is a good one.
It's a good point, actually, that Dave makes there, though. And that is the first time you see this and Vrenak comes out with that it's a fake line. It's a shocking part of the episode because you just think, oh, my God, like they've absolutely done an own goal now because the Romulans are going to join the Dominion. And it's only then when the shuttle gets destroyed and you realise, no, Garak saved the match by turning that own goal into the opposition's goal. It's an excellent first time watching part of the episode.
I was just going to say, it's a bit like an episode of Tales of the Unexpected, isn't it? You think you know what's going to happen, and then you think, oh, I can see where this is going, and then it just throws something at you, and you're like, oh, God, I didn't see that one. Like, it really does the twists really well. I really like, if you've never watched Tales of the Unexpected, I would highly recommend it if you like that storytelling.
Oh, yeah.
Roald Dahl, isn't it? Wrote a lot of them, maybe even all of them.
Yeah, doesn't he appear at the beginning? Sat behind a desk or something, whatever. You know, there's a bit where they dance at the beginning in the local Thai restaurant. There's a bit of glass, and if you go the other side of it, no one ever knows why I do it, but I do the twisty dance behind the glass.
I would know. I would get that.
So the next feedback we've got is from Cyberman, and they say, all in capitals, so I feel maybe I should be shouting this, but I will save the listeners' ears. Happy Easter all, including Crooked Drew and the nice man Sucky, who does not interfere at all with the voting of the red shirt at the end of episodes. Not like the evil and deranged Drew, who wants to put President Wei Young in prison. And anyway, he hardly knows a Dominion. Beta Zoid was a falling planet anyway. And Sisko hardly knew the Romulan persecution of President Trump. I mean, Gowron, who was hardly mentioned in the episode anyway, making it null and void and illegal and lazy on the fake hologram. So I thought the episode was good. 5 illegal indictments out of 5. Love, Donald. I mean, Cyberman 01. I don't quite know what to make of that. Does anyone got an explanation?
I'd like to know who he is, because this is the first time we've actually had feedback from this person, Cyberman. So anybody knows who he is, please let me know.
He's quite hilarious.
It might be Donald Trump himself.
I was just going to say, do you think the Donald's a fan of the show? Do you think he's been listening?
He does write in all capitals, doesn't he? So there's a point to it could be, Donald.
I am a fan. I'm the best fan. Yeah. That's my Donald Trump impression.
Must be Donald.
Is he?
So we've just got a brief one from Damon For You, who says, arguably DS9's greatest episode. I don't think you'll find many arguing with you there, Damon. Thank you.
Certainly not me.
I woke up this morning, put on my red shirt. Oh.
So who will get this week's red shirt of the week? Suki, any idea?
Oh, I've got plenty of ideas, and I have got a list yet again. Right, so I'm just going to just quickly go through them and my reasons to pick in each and every one of you. Deb, being too quiet because of that dog, right? You've been not really saying a word all the way through the episode because of
if
that.
If you'd heard how loud she barks, you'd have been grateful.
Yes, but we'd like to hear a little bit more from you next time. Jack, who teased this with the appearance of his cat, but the cat never appeared. I can't believe you did that, Jack.
I know. I'll work with her.
Andrea, who's got the Lurgy, and I'm just thinking she's going to pass it on to me. Just by talking to me, she's going to pass it on to me electronically. So I've been hoping that she wouldn't. And Drew, for deciding within 5 minutes he was going to redshirt me. 5 minutes? How can you have an opinion on who the best presenter and the worst presenter of the episode or the red shirt of the week? Within 5 minutes? I don't believe this. Right, so I'm actually going to go for Drew for just deciding within 5 minutes he was going to red shirt me.
I guess it just saves time, doesn't it, Drew?
It does, yeah. Do you want to know who I'm going to red shirt, Jack?
Oh, let me guess. Go on.
I did think about Deb for the 4.5, but no, yes, as predicted, it is Suki. You must watch Deep Space Nine. I know, you've got to read 5 books tonight and watch 3 episodes of Doctor Who, but I think you could also squeeze in 7 seasons of Deep Space Nine by the morning.
It's not much.
It's 4 episodes of Doctor Who I've got to watch tonight, and then I've got to read a book of the same episode, and I've got to listen to an audio book as well for the same episode. So yeah, this is my busy night, and I will get round to watching Deep Space Nine, but at the moment I'm watching Keeping Up Appearances, and as time goes by and some others do have them, and Coupling, and what's the other one that I'm watching? There's something else as well. Oh, Love Thy Neighbour. So there's quite a few.
Love Thy Neighbour.
Love Thy Neighbour.
You should definitely do a Love Thy Neighbour podcast.
I've somehow managed to find the complete Love Thy Neighbour, and I'm going to slowly go through from the beginning.
If you ever want to know which one of the cast is Suki, he's the one with the square eyes.
Oh, yes.
I thought I watch a lot of TV.
Love Thy Neighbour. You've got to let us know what you think of it.
I have watched a few in the past. I mean, this is like regular TV in the 70s. You'd have it on the telly.
Yeah, like Mind Your Language.
Mind Your Language was the other one. Dad would watch that all the time. Anyway, crack on.
Okay, Andrea, any idea for our red shirt?
I feel like seeing you binge watching Keep Up Appearances ahead of Deep Space Nine's pretty much sealed Sookie's fate there. Like, it's for his own good. I feel like I'm doing the Lord's work here. So I'm nominating Sookie because he needs to watch Deep Space Nine. No excuses.
I was going for Jack because of the cat, the lack of cat appearance, and also the fact that he chose the episode, which was very good, but it wasn't, I don't know. It was all right, yeah. I'm just not feeling it today, am I?
You're not. You can tell you've been quiet and you
just...
Yeah.
So,
next
Jack
time.
Chose
next...
an episode that we had nothing to complain about. There we are, red shirt.
I think that's a miracle on this show. By the way, this is my 99th review on the podcast.
Ooh.
So, yay! 99, and it's all started at either 2018 or 2019 Destination Star Trek, which I think was in Birmingham.
Yeah,
me and my friend were just looking for somewhere to sit down. There's cardboard Jason Isaacs over there. Oh, there's some chairs. Get chairs.
Brilliant.
It's gone on leaps and bounds since then, so.
Good old cardboard Jason for spotting you, or the other way around.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Jack, have you actually given us your vote, or are you still reminiscing?
I was just stolen tactic. Well, no, good one. I'd make a great politician. First, I'd like to nominate my cat Hermione for almost getting a red shirt. But actually, I think I'm just going to nominate you, Sookie, for not watching Deep Space Nine. Especially stopping just before it gets to be brilliant.
Doesn't mean that I'm going to immediately start watching Deep Space Nine. But what is my punishment, my way of being disposed of?
Andrea's good at this.
Well, actually, Sookie, as a special treat, we've made you an appointment. It's to go for to a very special tailor friend of ours and get a new suit. So, like, enjoy yourself.
right, okay. And what sort of suit would he make me? Would Garrick make me? Well, I've got my ideas. Drew had his hand up as well for something he was going to say.
I was going to suggest that episode of Deep Space Nine, Hard Time, where Miles O'Brien gets sentenced to 30 years and he only takes part in his brain like over like 2 hours or something, but he then has to live with the consequences of like 30 years of being in prison. We should do that to Sookie because then he can catch up on all the TV in 2 hours, couldn't he?
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that is a great idea. I'd like to catch up with all my telly.
How's he going to do the editing of the podcast?
No, that can go down to one of you guys.
He can do it after the 2 hours that he actually spends on in Hard Time.
True's four of this.
Right. Yeah, so, okay, I'll have the 2 hours rather than Garrick and his tailoring. Sorry, Andrew, but that's what I'll have. Cheers, Drew. Sign us off then, Jack.
This has been Trek This Out. Episode covering season 6, episode 19 of Deep Space Nine in the Pale Moonlight. I've been Jack. This has been Sookie.
Bye.
This has been Drew.
Hello.
This has been Andrea.
Bye.
And underneath, this has been Deb.
Bye.
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 Lighters.
It's a fun.
So, this is a huge victory for the good guys. This may even be the turning point of the entire war. There is even a welcome to the fight party tonight in the wardroom. So, I lied. I cheated. I bribed men to cover the crimes
of other men. I am an accessory to murder. But the most damning thing of all, I think I can live with it. And if I had to do it all over again, I would. Garrick was right about one thing. A guilty conscience is a small price to pay for the safety of the Alpha Quadrant. So I will learn to live with it. Because I can live with it. I can live with it. Computer, erase that entire personal log.
So I've got my, I've written my notes out, but it's right at the end of my notes app for tracks out, so I could be scrolling for a while.
Well, this is all editing for me. This is great. I mean, I was expecting an early night, get it all done, but now Jack has just made more work for me.
Jesus, aim right, long nights.
Yes, we have gathered in the past.
Yeah, I can't really defend myself on that.
Drew, any more notes? Because I didn't make any. Right, to be honest.
Well, I change a habit of a lifetime, Saki. Eh?
Oh, shush me.
I'm really... Sorry, Suki,
shouldn't the red light be flashing on the record bit?
No, it is.
I just thought I would...
It's well worth an interrupt to make sure that we're.
Well, I've just been wondering why she's been so quiet during the whole episode recording. There's only been a little bit from Deb, and all of a sudden she pops up with that and gets me worried just then.
Well, I know it's not before midday, but I thought I'd keep you on your toes.
Thanks, Pat.
I panicked.
Sorry, Drew, carry on.
No, that's okay. I can't. You do know really April Fools has finished.
I did do a doodle, though. Look. I did a drawing of Suki.
Oh, that's pretty lifelike as well. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
The artist.
Great for an audio podcast.
I am going to watch the next episode because I started watching it. It did get me into it. And they immediately start off with Vic Fontaine on the holodeck, and you kind of think, wow, this is exciting. Now they've got all this war going on and it's all going to turn around, they're all going to be terrified. Jake's hiding under the bed there they are. Dr. Bashir is introducing Vic Fontaine to his mates in the holodeck, so I've got to find out what's going on now. I have to watch the other bit.
Do you want to go on to listeners' feedback?
Readers' minds.
Readers' minds.
Oh, what's going to say?
Thank you for listening, and you can find us all on Twitter as a group. You can find us on at TrekThisOutPod, or you can go to our Facebook page at TrekThisOut. Just Google that. You can find me on Twitter as SideMat_151.
So you can find me on Twitter as at Vintage1983V if you're into Star Trek shitposting and a lot of other thirst. If you particularly like to follow me Star Trek art, have a look on Instagram for Vin of the Basement.
And I'm just Lufdee, LUFFDEE on Twitter. But if you are interested in knowing our obsession about Jason Isaacs, you can find me, Kat, and Andrea posting weird stuff about Jason Isaacs. #TeamBasement.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as 23BDI.